Blame. My father's sister came to fetch my brother, even as Ma's body cooled. She came to bring my brother back to Lubbock to raise as her own, but my brother died before Aunt Ellis got here. She wouldn't even hold his little body. She barely noticed me. As soon as she found my brother dead, she had a talk with my father. Then she turned around and headed back to Lubbock. The neighbor women came. They wrapped my baby brother in a blanket and placed him in Ma's bandaged arms. We buried them together on the rise Ma loved, the one she gazed at from the kitchen window, the one that looks out over the dried-up Beaver River. Reverend Bingham led the service. He talked about Ma, but what he said made no sense, and I could tell he didn't truly know her. He'd never even heard her play piano. He asked my father to name my baby brother. My father hunched over, said nothing. I spoke up in my father's silence. I told the Reverend my brother's name was Franklin, like our president. The women talked as they scrubbed death from our house. I stayed in my room, silent on the iron bed, listening to their voices. Billy Joe threw the pail, they said. An accident, they said. Under their words, a finger pointed. They didn't talk about my father leaving kerosene by the stove. They didn't say a word about my father drinking himself into a stupor while Ma writhed, begging for water. They only said, Billy Joe threw the pail of kerosene. August, 1934. Birthday. I walked to town. I don't look back over my shoulder at the single grave holding Ma and my little brother. I am trying not to look back at anything. Dust rises with each step. There's a greasy smell to the air. On either side of the road are the carcasses of jackrabbits, small birds, field mice, stretching out into the distance. My father stares out across his land, empty but for a few withered stalks like the tufts on an old man's head. I don't know if he thinks more of Ma or the wheat that used to grow here. There's barely a blade of grass swaying in the stinging wind. There are only these lumps of flesh that once were hands long enough to span octaves, swinging at my sides. I come up quiet and sit behind Arlie Wonderdale's house where no one can see me and lean my head back and close my eyes and listen to Arlie play. August, 1934. Roots. President Roosevelt tells us to plant trees. Trees will break the wind. He says trees will end the drought. The animals can take shelter there. Children can take shelter. Trees have roots, he says. They hold on to the land. That's good advice, but I'm not sure he understands the problem. Trees have never been at home here. They're just not meant to be here. Maybe none of us are meant to be here, only the prairie grass and the hawks. My father will stay no matter what. He's stubborn as sod. He and the land have a hold on each other. But what about me? August, 1934. The empty spaces. I don't know my father anymore. He sits across from me. He looks like my father. He chews his food like my father. He brushes his dusty hair back like my father. But he is a stranger. I am awkward with him and irritated, and I want to be alone, but I am terrified of being alone. We are both changing. We are shifting to fill in the empty spaces left by Ma. I keep my raw and stinging hands behind my back when he comes near, because he stares when he sees them. September, 1934. The hole. The heat from the cook stove hurts my burns, and the salt, the water, and the dust hurt too. I spend all my time in pain, and my father spends his time out the side of the house, digging a hole, 40 feet by 60 feet, 6 feet deep. I think he is digging the pond to feed off the windmill, the one Ma wanted, but he doesn't say. He just digs. He sends me to the train yard to gather boards. Boards that once were boxcars but now are junk. I bring them back, careful of the scabs and the raw sores on my bare hands. I don't know what he needs boards for. He doesn't tell me. When he's not in the hole digging, he works on the windmill, replacing the parts that kept it from turning. People stop by and watch. They think my father is crazy digging such a big hole. I think he's crazy, too. The water will seep back into the earth. It'll never stay put in any old pond. But my father has thought through all that, and he's digging anyway. I think to talk to Ma about it. And then I remember. I can almost forgive him the taking of Ma's money. I can almost forgive him his night in Guymon getting drunk. But as long as I live, no matter how big a hole he digs, I can't forgive him that pail of kerosene left by the side of the stove. September, 1934. Kilauea. A volcano erupted in Hawaii. Kilauea. It threw huge chunks into the air. The ground shook and smoke choked everything in its path. Sounds a little like a dust storm. September, 1934. Boxes. In my closet are two boxes, the gatherings of my life. Papers, school drawings, a broken hairpin, a dress from my baby days, my first lock of hair, a tiny basket woven from prairie grass, a doll with a china head, a pink ball, 3 dozen marbles, a fan from Baxter's funeral home, my baby teeth in a glass jar, a torn map of the world, 2 candy wrappers, 1,000 things I haven't looked at in years. I kept promising to go through the boxes with Ma and get rid of what I didn't need, but I never got to it and now my hands hurt, and I haven't got the heart. September, 1934. Night Bloomer. Mrs. Brown's Cereus plant bloomed on Saturday night. She sent word after promising I could come see it. I rubbed my gritty eyes with swollen hands. My stomach grizzled as I made my way through the dark to her house. Ma wouldn't have let me go at all. My father just stood in the doorway and watched me leave. It was almost 3 in the morning when I got there. A small crowd stood around. Mrs. Brown said, "The blossom opened at midnight, big as a dinner plate. It took only moments to unfold. How can such a flower find a way to bloom in this drought? In this wind. It blossomed at night when the sun couldn't scorch it, when the wind was quiet, when there might have been a sip of dew to freshen it. I couldn't watch at dawn when the flower touched by the first finger of morning light wilted and died. I couldn't watch as the tender petals burned up in the sun." September, 1934. The Path of Our Sorrow. Miss Freeland said, "During the Great War, we fed the world. We couldn't grow enough wheat to fill all the bellies. The price the world paid for our wheat was so high it swelled our wallets and our heads. And we bought bigger tractors, more acres, until we had mortgages and rent and bills beyond reason. But we all felt so useful we didn't notice. Then the war ended, and before long Europe didn't need our wheat anymore. They could grow their own. But we needed Europe's money to pay our mortgage, our rent, our bills. We squeezed more cattle, more sheep onto less land, and they grazed down the stubble till they reached root. And the price of wheat kept dropping, so we had to grow more bushels to make the same amount of money we made before, to pay for all that equipment, all that land. And the more sod we plowed up, the drier things got, because the water that used to collect there under the grass, biding its time, keeping things alive through the dry spells, wasn't there anymore. Without the sod, the water vanished, the soil turned to dust, until the wind took it, lifting it up and carrying it away. Such a sorrow doesn't come suddenly. There are 1,000 steps to take before you get there. But now, sorrow climbs up our front steps, big as Texas, and we didn't even see it coming, even though it had been making its way straight for us all along." September, 1934.